Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am the host of Dice Exploder, the Emmy-nominated podcast all about RPG design right here on the Many-Sided Network. And after years of interviews and ideation with some of the best designers in RPGs, my first print game is coming to Kickstarter. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes, a John Wick-inspired game about getting your bloody revenge. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a game about standing in the shadow of a skyscraper in the pouring rain, bathed in bubblegum neon and someone else's blood, staring down at the man who ruined your life all those years ago, raising the barrel of a gun and asking, "Will you pull the trigger?" Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a one-shot capsule game box set deck builder RPG, and you can follow it right now on Kickstarter. Back Band-Aids and Bullet Holes on May 5th.
Welcome, travelers, to a world where the familiar echoes of the past intertwine with the haunting whispers of what could have been. The year is 1997, but not the one you remember. This is Pacifica, once the golden state of California, now a fractured land, where the remnants of civilization cling desperately to the ruins of a forgotten promise. After the war tore the United States apart, new nations rose from the ashes. Pacifica, the jewel of the West, is no longer a beacon of hope. Its cities stand tall but hollow, ruled by corporations like Century, whose grasp on reality and the minds of the people is tighter than any governments could ever hope to be. Here, technology is both savior and curse. Neuronics, once a marvel, now a prison, has drawn millions into its synthetic embrace. The electric state, or the neuroscape, they call it, a place where dreams are more vivid than reality and where the lines between man and machine blur until they vanish altogether. But for those who remain, for those who still walk the desolate highways and forgotten streets, there is another journey to be taken. A journey not just through the twisted remains of a broken world, but into the very heart of what it means to be human in a time when humanity itself is slipping away. Catherine, the weight of your loss has been like an anchor, holding you in place, pulling you deeper into the dark waters of grief and rage. But today, something shifts. A message arrives, simple yet powerful. Coordinates, a name, confirmation that the man who took your son from you is in San Francisco. The cult, the Luminaries, has been growing there, and their leader, known as the Radiant Shepherd, is within your reach. This is the day you've been preparing for. You feel a cold clarity settle over you. The time has come to act. Every instinct inside tells you that you cannot wait any longer. And so what do?
I think this was a decision that was made a long time ago, before she received the coordinates, before she received any information on the Radiant Shepherd. So most of her things in her flat have been packed neatly away as it is, as if she's going away on a vacation for a really long time. She's probably sat at the kitchen table, probably making some kind of binder with important documents, for when someone comes looking for her. Eventually they will. Family, friends, that kind of thing, when they haven't seen her for a while. But the only thing going through her mind is those coordinates.
Explain to us what Catherine looks like.
So Catherine is in her early to mid-40s, freckled face, green eyes, tightly curled, short brunette hair. And she's wearing a pair of faded grey denim dungarees. They were used primarily as maternity clothes, but when moving into her single flat, she found them amongst other fond memories whilst unpacking boxes. And while they now look a little baggy on her, she looks most comfortable when she's wearing them, almost like her from another time. Usually she throws on any old band t-shirt underneath, but it's not uncommon to find her t-shirts bespeckled with flakes of paint from home renovations long past, or splotches of hair dye from her many bouts of fighting her grey hairs. She hasn't been seen without her trusty black and white daisy pattern Doc Martens for as long as anyone in the apartment complex can remember, and it's usually what people who don't know her name recognize her by.
Mm-hmm. And what is her overall countenance when she's in this? You know, you finally got like the official details. What does she look like in terms of emotions?
Like I said, it's a decision that she'd made a long time ago. So there isn't like a frantic sort of, I have to get there now. It's calm and collected. Like she's had this plan in place for so long. And now that it's time to do it, she's literally just following the motions of this plan. Whatever comes next, those parts she hasn't planned, she'll deal with when they happen. But yeah, very cool, very calm. There's a very like meticulous way in how she's like posting her papers into her binder, writing notes to say what they're for. She's very like, yeah, very meticulous, very calm. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know that she was on her way to hunt someone down. You would think she's literally just packing up to go on a holiday.
And so she kind of has like this resolute feeling about her.
Very thin-lipped, mm-hmm. I'd say. Very thin-lipped, as if she's constantly got something else on her mind. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't stop her from completing the tasks that she set out for herself, even though she is distracted.
Okay. And so you gather your things calmly. You know that this journey is something that you must take, no matter the cost. You step into the hallway, and immediately your eyes meet those of Ryan across the hall. And a flash of familiarity and recognition comes into your mind as you feel like you've seen those eyes before. Ryan, now the thrill of escaping the confines of your life in Watts, that's where you guys are. You're in a neighborhood called Watts in Los Angeles, in a project area. And so you had your life in Watts. It starts to feel like it's fading. Reality is crashing down. You've broken your contract with Century's Future Bound program. An act of defiance that will not go unpunished. You know that the clock is ticking and you can feel the walls closing in. Even the walls in this hallway now feel like they're shrinking. And just this morning, you spotted a sleek black car parked too long at the corner. Was it someone who had just run out of gas? Or was it someone else? But you know, these seem to be the kind that Century uses to keep tabs on their assets. I say that in quotation marks. It's a quiet reminder that they know, and they're coming. What does Catherine see as she steps out into the hallway?
Well, Ryan is fairly lanky for his age, 19. His denim jacket almost kind of floods him as he wears it. He has a bucket hat that's kind of the swirl of yellow and blue that barely contains his kind of messy brown curly hair that is so long it almost covers his kind of gray eyes. A splash of freckles goes across his nose and slightly kind of sunburnt pale olive cheeks. Underneath that, like, kind of big denim jacket, he wears kind of this owl mascot shirt with these wide eyes underneath it and a pale kind of shell necklace over top. He kind of gives a kind of this, one of his teeth is a little bit chipped. He kind of gives a smile at Kath as he kind of nervously pulls out his Polaroid and just double checks that the film's loaded before kind of snapping it closed. There's a little bit of a nervousness about him as he kind of like taps his foot a bit. Is everything ready on your end, Kath?
Kath turns the lock in her apartment door. Again, there's no fumbling, trying to get the key in or anything. Straight in, lock. She puts her keys underneath a faded doormat that she's had out. She probably found it maybe on a sidewalk somewhere when people have moved out, took it home because it's a home, but it's not a home. But seeing Ryan, she looks over her shoulder at him and gives a kind smile. I think so, honey. How about you?
Yeah, I made sure to take out the trash and think everything's clear at home and got my bags packed and ready to go.
And you're sure about this?
Can you kind of see him kind of gulp and his throat tightens up a bit, but he kind of maintains that smile even though it kind of fidgets a bit at the edges. Yeah. I've always wanted to see the Golden Gate Bridge. I've heard it's beautiful this time of year.
Well, with any luck, it might be on our way. I'm sure we can make a stop somewhere so you get to see that. And for a moment, she goes to reach out and sort of even out his bucket hat as it's sort of on a lopside. But she catches herself at the last moment and instead folds one of the papers that she has in her hand. Papers containing the coordinates.
Imani. The news comes as you finish cleaning up the small makeshift pharmacy that's been your life for so long. The volunteer program in San Francisco, the one chance you have to truly become the doctor you've always wanted to be, is closing its doors soon. Your heart skips a beat as you realize that this is your moment. All the nights spent treating the sick with stolen supplies or giving away free supplies, the whispered warnings from your few trusted friends that the authorities were closing in, it all leads to this decision. Do you stay and face the consequences? Or do you leave now and chase the dream that's always felt just out of reach? You glance at the clock, knowing that you have to leave immediately if you're going to make it. Can you describe what Imani looks like in this moment at the pharmacy?
So Imani sitting behind the counter at the pharmacy, contemplating what to do as she looks at the clock. And barely a second passes before she immediately gets up, doesn't take off her coat or anything, which she is basically drowning in at this point. Like, her jacket was always too big. She asked them to order a new one for her, but it never came. So she has an oversized jacket for work. But the first thing she does is grabs a cooler, fills it with ice, and goes to the back to take as much medicine as she can mm-hmm. with her, especially the insulin, which she knows needs to stay cold.
Yeah.
The more she's thinking in that moment, the more she has to offer this program, the more accepting they'll be of her when she finally gets there. So she's just basically smashing and grabbing whatever she can. If it's already bottled, she's taking it. If it's not, she's bottling it herself and labeling it. And on top of that, she grabs just like any random bag that some like pharmacies have, grabs a bag with some snacks, provisions, everything you would need for like a long trip, pretty much.
Okay. And pharmacies, they kind of have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So you stock up as much as you can. You know that Catherine has a car out of the people you know in that, because you guys all live in the same hall on that apartment, in that apartment building. Mm-hmm. You know that she has been planning to leave for a while now, and this may be your only chance. So what do you do?
She grabs her personal items and all the stuff that she packed up. And does she see, when she gets outside, she doesn't see anybody like driving or anything. It's just like empty street, empty parking lot sort of situation.
It's currently empty. Yeah.
It's currently empty. Mm-hmm. And she, more often than not, walks to work because she does not own a car. So she books it back home, full sprint. She's not athletic by any means, but she is pushing it with as much adrenaline that she has at that point.
Okay. And Catherine, Ryan, you guys are at your car. You have the back open, and you're like setting stuff in the back, and you hear the panting and running of Imani from down the hall.
Ryan gives a little shudder as he kind of nervously looks to see what the running footsteps are, and then kind of that stress releases as he sees Imani.
Wait, sorry. Oh my God. No. Are you guys leaving?
Catherine doesn't even turn around from putting stuff in the boot. She's sort of rearranging what Ryan put in there to make everything fit better. But she does sort of hesitate and stop. And she says, "We're leaving right about now."
I have food, I have medicine and everything like that. Can I please come with you? I'm sorry for overhearing. I know you're going to San Francisco and I really need to get up there.
Catherine will turn around to face her. And again, a warm smile. She's holding maybe like a duffel bag just full of clothes. Just in case anything of hers gets ruined. Anybody needs any extras, extra blankets, extra fleeces, that sort of thing. But she smiles and says, "All you needed to do was ask, honey." And then she'll open the back door. One of the back doors of the car. And for her to sort of enter. But she does also hold out her arms in case there's anything she wants, Imani wants to put in the boot.
She sighs in relief and smiles. "Thank you. I'm so sorry for springing this on you, but you guys are a lifesend." And she kind of brings everything that she packed up from her job and holds it out to Kath.
Ryan will curiously like peer over into each bag, kind of like to see what it is, but there's not that understanding as he's looking at each item.
As she takes Imani's things, she looks down at it, but doesn't question it. What she knows of Imani is that she's passionate about her work. And she assumes it has something to do with that, but it's not her place to pry. But she sort of straightens her back and her expression's a bit more serious. If she had a kind smile before, her face is now back to that regular sort of thin purse lips. "I do just gotta let you know, once we go, we're not coming back. You understand that, right?"
"I wasn't planning to come back anyway. I'm tired of this town and I want to make a difference for once."
And then she gives like a solemn nod, sort of, "I understand." And then begins sort of like packing things. "Make yourself comfy. We've got some snacks in the back there. A few blankets just in case you get sleepy in the first few hours. We'll maybe have to switch drivers every now and then if you're able. If not, that's all right. We'll just have to take a few more rest breaks. Does that work with everybody?
No problem.
Ryan kind of gets this mischievous smile. Could I drive?
Do you have a license?
And he kind of has this open mouth kind of thing as he's thinking of what word to say. And he's like, and he kind of mutters it. He's like, no.
What kind of mother would I be if I let my son, if I let a boy your age drive with no license? And she sort of slams the boot down, pats the top of the car. If we're ready then?
And we cut to a man watching all this from a window. He has seen you, Catherine, Ryan. He saw Imani run up and start talking to you guys. Luke, the stakes have never been higher. You've been by Catherine's side through a lot of it. You know, watching her pain turn to determination, her grief to a burning need for justice. Or is it revenge? And now, the threads of your own past seem to be tightening around your neck. Your father, the senator, seems to be involved in something much darker than you initially imagined. You've pieced together enough to know that the Radiant Shepherd, this cult leader in San Francisco, is somehow connected to him. As Catherine and everybody else in the parking lot is preparing to leave, you realize this journey is more than just helping a friend. It's about exposing the truth, even if it means confronting the man who shadowed your life from the beginning. And there's no turning back now. What do we see as you're looking at out the window watching this? What does Luke look like?
At first, it's not about his look. It's how he keeps his apartment neat, nothing out of place, everything organized, meticulous.
Mm.
But at the same time, sparse, which is what you would call, which is how you would describe Luke. His hair is a bit disheveled. The only thing that's disheveled about him. He has piercing blue eyes, a button-down shirt, and a waist-high slack pants. And he looks down to Kat, Ryan, and unexpectedly, his pharmacist, which is something else. Luke has been thinking about it. Thinking the plants that are the cat's plants for the longest time, if it's the right thing, and then knowing that Ryan would join her just frustrates him a bit, but also makes him kind of worried. He takes a deep sigh. And walking away from the window, he has also a backpack ready, knowing the day will come where his neighbor and neighbors will be heading just like that. And hearing or assuming Kat would probably not return from this trip, he just needs to. He can't lose another friend. Or he can't lose the connection he has made here, right now. And he just grabs his backpack and just leave the apartment and headed downstairs to where the cars parked.
Catherine, you see him. You're about to, like, get into the driver's seat. You have the car door open, one leg about to sit down. And you see Luke making his way out. Large backpack on. Over his shoulder as well.
And there he is. I hope you don't mind that we've, picked up an extra passenger, as it were. And she sort of does a thumb sort of jerk to the back seat to where Marnie's sitting.
He bows down because the car's lower, and like, the pharmacist? Hi, Manny.
Hey. And when she's saying hi, she's kind of taking note of everything in the cooler right now, because that's where all of the medicine is. So she's just taking stock at the moment.
Okay, guess... Kat, are you really sure?
I've been over this. I know you. I know you want me to change my mind, but you know why, right?
Yes, I know why. That doesn't change the fact. And he, because Luke scratches his head. I'll grow gray hairs because of you.
I'm sure I've got a spare box dye at home somewhere. You can grab it when we're back. But she gives a sort of, like, her eyes are slightly narrowed and there's a sort of a wicked sort of smile. Yeah. Because they both know she's not coming back.
Yeah. Look, if you're...
I understand. I do, really. And she'll sort of shut the car door, like step out, shut the car door, and maybe walk towards the front of the apartment so they can talk a bit quieter. Mm. I understand the reservations. I do. This, you have been such a help to me. Moving in here, this... Look, and she'll take one of your hands in both of hers. So one of her hands underneath, one of her hands on top, and she'll give it a reassuring squeeze. You knew this day would come.
I hope it didn't.
I know, sweetie. For the
look, in a hushed tone. You won't bring him back.
Her jaw kind of sets when you say that, and she withdraws both of her hands. I'm not trying to bring him back. I'm trying to move on.
Just don't follow. I need to go with you just to be sure that you won't follow him. You won't end up like him. I can't lose you like that.
She'll maybe, the hardness in her face has kind of melted away. And again, it's just replaced with this really soft smile. And she sort of reaches forward to give his cheek a little pinch. And then she taps the bottom of his chin. We haven't even set off yet. Look. I appreciate the concern. And it's not just me going on this. We've got Ryan here. We've now got Imani here. And you have your own reasons for going.
Well, it feels like I'm being forced to go.
Stay behind or come with.
I hold her hand a bit tighter. I'm joining.
That's what I like to hear, sweetie. And she'll give another sort of like nudge on your cheek. She laughs as she tried to bat it away.
You know, I am not that young. You're just about, what, 10 years my senior?
You're all a babies to me. Come on. We're late as it is.
Luke just rolls his eyes and half defeated, half accepting, and half happy that he's forced to do this journey. I'm assuming he's going to take a seat at the back.
Okay. On that note, let's decide, you know, who's sitting where. So, Meg, real quick, describe the car that you have, your car.
I don't think I can do that.
You have a Nissan Maxima. You have a 90s Nissan Maxima. Very, very small kind of compact car, but it gets some good miles. But where's everybody sitting? So we know that Catherine's in the driver's seat. What about everybody else?
Ryan would definitely take shotgun. He's kind of up front, but he's straining against his seatbelt over the center console, trying to see what Amani's doing as she's like cataloging all those medical items. He's kind of just peering.
I'm saying that you always crane your head, Ryan. I was like, want to switch? You gotta choose, son.
I'm fine. This is just comfortable. I mean, and the scenery we'll see passing through the front windshield will be great. Got enough film in here for a few roadside shots, so.
Okay. Just so I know, I'm not attached to the back seat.
Okay.
Good to know.
So it sounds like Imani and Luke are in the back then.
Mm-hmm.
Imani, would there be space enough to like put the cooler like between us? Okay. So for now, the open cooler is facing Imani, so Luke would not be able to see inside of it, and she's just trying to discreetly like take note of how much there is of everything.
Okay, so try like taking inventory, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as you guys set off, what song are you guys playing on the road?
Creedence Clearwater, Green Grass. Oh, wait, yeah. Was it Green Grass or Green River? I forgot.
I have no idea. Good choice, though. Okay, you guys put that on, slide the tape in.
I don't know, Freebird.
It's okay. It's okay. But a question for everybody: what does everyone know about each other? What do you think the other players, like already, or the other travelers, already know about you? So we'll start with Catherine. What would you say?
So I think obviously Luke knows the most because he's helped her set this up. He knows why she's leaving. He knows exactly what she's going to do, why she's going to do it. But I feel like she's kept that from Ryan. She hasn't said exactly. He kind of has an idea that they're trying to find this cult leader, but she's not gone into further details about it. So I imagine it's just sort of he would assume she's probably there to talk to him, maybe confront him. It's common knowledge that her son's died when she moved in. She sort of explained, you know, I'm moving in because I've recently split with my husband, sort of thing. So people do definitely know that part. Okay. But I think the general sort of, even other people in the apartment block, they probably just, you know, assume that she's going on a road trip, that sort of thing. and then what she knows about the others, Imani's kind of just been that neighbor that they've both greeted in passing. If she's had any extra like leftovers and stuff, she's always sort of made up a plate and wrapped it in foil, left it on her doorstep because she knows that she works long hours, that kind of thing. She's just trying to, you know, be neighborly, look out for those that she can. She knows that Ryan struggles at home. Mm. She's never pried. She's never asked the details, but she's known literally from the second that she met him, that she wants to get him out of there.
Got her.
Here we go!
Oh my god, he threw,
here
he
we
threw
go!
The chair.
He threw the chair.
And now he's getting it back all because right. We're gonna have to sit.
We are in Casey's home. That was Casey's actual chair.
You look out of the window and you see a Toyota Previa upside down on fire.
Oh, oh my god. Oh.
But it's not nearby any trees or anything, so it's fine.
On fire.
It's fine. It's not fine to me, GM. Jesus Christ, that's my fucking car.
Dynamite headbutt.
He screams as he headbutts this man.
Honestly, his left jaundiced eyeball pops out of his head.
Oh! And if you were to take a picture the second their two heads were touching, it might have been an intimate, tender scene between friends or lovers. But if you were to take a picture at any other second, yeah. It is just absolutely horrifying.
For some men, violence is a form of intimacy, which is so sad.
That is
maybe
so
for
sad.
This man. But anyway. Boom! Smashed in the head!
Bodhi has a pocket full of, like, one oversized precious moment angel that has a real strange face.
Oh, I thought that was your dick.
Oh! It was his dick. There's a hole in his pocket and his Jesus. Penis, which does God. Resemble a precious moment angel with a strange face.
Oh, it's a strange face, but it actually looks like a pretty normal penis head.
And that's what we call facts.
He looks back and he says one last threatening phrase, pointing to the bar.
I'm gonna... And Violet shoots him in the head.
You see this guy's ear get blown off, flying off his head.
Ah! Bye-bye.
And then at this point, Scratch pops up like a mummy.
Ah, mummy! Headbutt!
Dynamite headbutt!
Something is rising, piecing itself together from the bodies and viscera around it. Its black wings spread, and it looks back at you with red, wet eyes.
Got her.
And then with Luke, again, I feel like he knows why she's going, but it's like an unspoken thing. She's never said it out loud. They've never discussed it. They've never had like a full on, but he knows exactly why. And she knows that he is going to confront his dad in some way. She doesn't know why particularly, but she knows that he's done something bad or something Luke doesn't agree with. She can see that in the way he talks about him. And I imagine they've spent many an hour sort of round her kitchen table, putting things together, sort of, you know, getting it all planned and that kind of thing. But again, there's never been like a sort of in-depth, honest conversation about why they're doing this. It's mm-hmm. It's just unspoken sort of... I'd say assumptions, but agreements. Like, she hasn't tried to sort of, like, deny any of it, and neither has he, but they've never confirmed or opened up about why they're doing this.
So it sounds like you have a pretty good relationship with everybody in the car.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amicable, sounds like. And what about Ryan? What do they know about you?
I would say... they know just on the onset he is very, very much fidgety. He's kind of a little bit distractible as he kind of looks through his camera in that viewfinder and looks to see what he could capture with that. With his interactions with Imani, like when he stopped by that pharmacy, he would usually just ask, like, what could you do to gain weight or to replenish fluids if you haven't drinking in a while? Which kind of hinted at some kind of form of neglect, either if it was on his side or someone he knew, as he was asking that. I would say, as far as what Kath knows about Ryan, she may have glanced into the space of their apartment across the hall, mm-hmm. and seen kind of just like trash bags kind of just stacked up against the edges. And just this general feeling of neglect, dishes in the sink kind of piled high. That sort of thing, and just him kind of on the day of the trip, this general kind of just nervousness and anxiety. Even as he's sitting in the car, he's kind of like glancing at the rear view mirror and kind of just impatiently kind of tapping his foot on the car's bottom. As far as what Ryan knows about everyone else in the car, He's known Kath for quite some time. He's done odd jobs for her and was pretty close with James and was hit hard. when that happened, so he doesn't like to dwell on that too much. Imani, he knows vaguely as just like this kind of as a pharmacy technician, which is just kind of one of those things where he's like, oh, I've seen doctors on TV, and he immediately kind of builds that association to Imani, almost putting them on a pedestal. Mm. Just as like that kind of gateway to this world he doesn't understand. And then as far as what he knows about Luke, he knows very little. He knows that Luke will stop by Kath's every now and again while he's doing chores and stuff. So he knows him in passing, but not much else beyond that.
Mm. Okay. And for Imani, what would you say they would know about you?
I would say everyone knows Imani at very much a surface level.
Mm.
She's smart and she knows a lot about just like medical practices and what to do with certain symptoms just from learning. They would know that she is like big on wanting to learn and knowledge and everything. Mm-hmm. But her personal life, they can only guess just from looking at her that she does not take care of herself. Her fingernails are always bitten off from stress. She's always wearing band-aids because of that, because of overbiting. She has bags under her eyes, and she's very skinny at the same time. Not because, like, she's naturally built that way. It's just she forgets to eat sometimes because she's too busy studying,
yeah,
or trying to gain more knowledge or taking up more hours at the pharmacy so she can, like, have money.
Yeah.
To, like,
yeah,
pay for her apartment, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And how does it feel to be sitting next to Luke?
She doesn't have much of any feelings yet. It's more so of like, oh, I've seen you around the apartment, I guess you're coming along. She doesn't have that many friends. She's not really sociable. She knows of everyone, but the closest person she's probably talked to more regularly would be Kath.
Okay. Okay. And so we have Luke, who's sitting next to her. What would you say everybody else in the car knows of Luke?
He was probably one of the stranger dudes in the apartment, just for the sheer reason he's very, very OCD on how he presents himself.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, he's only wearing button downs. Like, he has no casual clothes, let's put it that way. Always in semi-casual business attire. Additionally, I'll be probably closest with Kat. Kat and I, as she mentioned, are very close. We have talked, we have planned together, but the hard hitting questions are always avoided, and it's basically just a dance, knowing that we're both interested in San Francisco, but we're not saying the reasons why. We just assumed. And while interacting with Kath in that way, I occasionally see Ryan. And though Ryan and I don't have anything deeper than acquaintances, I'm always like worried about him in the sense that he is interacting with Kat, and knowing the effects of that, it just makes me question the whole relationship. And with Imani, she's my pharmacist. I got my insulin from her.
Yeah.
That's why it's a big question mark. It's like, what is she doing here? Mm-hmm. It's like, so, because I'm between she and I, we probably have a very like service and client kind of a service client situation. It's like when you're the first time you enter a car with your waiter kind of situation. It's like, I know you because I go to your place, but like your workplace, but I don't know you. Yeah. And right now, because in the car itself, I'm just like, why are you here?
Is that what is that what Luke is thinking?
Yeah, that's what that Luke will be thinking. It's like, where? It's okay.
And you guys set off, and you know, Kath, you know that you can take the I-5 North Highway, or you can take Highway 1. Highway 1 is the most spectacular way to travel between Los Angeles to San Francisco. I-5 North will get you there a little bit quicker, though. And so that is something that you kind of ponder. You can ponder out loud as the car gets started and you set out onto the road.
I think which route to take, she toils with it literally as soon as they set off. And she doesn't make her decision until she literally makes the decision. Mm-hmm.
Someone has a map. It is 1997, so there's no, like, GPS. So I'm guessing Ryan is, like, since he's right next to you, he is the person who's, like, holding the map. Maybe? It's up to you guys how you guys want to plan that.
Yeah, she'll kind of, like, as she's driving, she'll sort of, like, eyes on the road, but sort of trying to lean so that she can speak to him. She's like, what was that thing you wanted to see again?
The Golden Gate Bridge?
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Which way is the best way?
The best way?
To go see it.
He'll kind of open up the dashboard console to kind of grab at that map and unfold it with that, like, crinkling, just to see the paths.
While you're doing that, I will definitely mention we should probably take the scenic route. It will take longer to go to San Francisco, but all the views are there.
Isn't this kind of like an imperative we need to get to San Francisco sort of thing? I didn't think we were making pit stops or anything like that.
The difference is not
what kind of views are...
Ooh. It's the coast, and you would see Luke just kind of quiet down a bit and would describe as best as he could every beautiful thing you could see in at the West Road, just so it feels like some of it a bit too much. It's like, that's not really a good view. It's just like, I'm just saying it's a good view, we should go there. Trying to extend this travel as much as possible.
Kind of see Riot inhale a bit, and it kind of crinkles the edge of the map as you're getting more and more excited as you're describing this kind of vista with the ocean and stuff. He's like, looks like Cap, why not? Can we take that route?
It's almost painful to hear that kind of excitement, especially because he is so young too. And she taps the steering wheel with a finger as she sort of thinks it over. I can't really say no to that now, can I? And then she'll sort of like the glance in the rearview mirror to look at Imani. We'll get there in good time. I didn't realize you had a time limit. What reason? Is it San Francisco in particular you wanted to go to, or just out of here?
From what I heard, there was a facility looking for volunteers. Not a lot of nurses and doctors available in San Francisco, apparently, so it would be a good learning opportunity. I mean, taking, like, a pit stop or two isn't gonna, like completely get me out of that, applying time, but I would love it if we got there sooner rather than later, but hey, you guys are all in agreement. I will go with what you guys go with, and we'll see what happens, but I really need to get there as soon as possible.
Well, I say we take this detour, but we keep in mind, and she'll sort of look specifically at Ryan for this, but we'll keep in mind that Imani has somewhere to be. Agreed?
Ryan will eagerly nod. Yeah. It probably won't take that long. Honestly, I'll get a few pictures and then Then we can go, I promise. And he kind of crosses his fingers in the seat.
And then she'll look back at Imani from the rearview mirror. We'll get you there, sweetie, I promise. And she gives a little wink at the end.
Okay, thanks. And hearing all that does not ease her worries at all. She's giving like a smile, but you can tell it's kind of like strained. Like, okay, sure, yeah, we'll get there when we get there.
For Imani, you know there are ways to, if you want to figure out certain information, you kind of check through the Neuroscape if you want to get like the specific day that they're not accepting volunteers any longer.
I'm gonna keep that in my back pocket for later. I will do that.
Okay. But yeah, so you're taking Highway 1. Like Luke was explaining, all the places you can go, Santa Monica goes to Malibu, and then Ventura, Santa Barbara, Solvang, Pismo Beach. Just like all these routes along the way. And this trip is going to add another 100 miles. I think already it was 341, I believe, around there to get from LA to San Francisco. 100 miles or 160 kilometers. So, Kath, you know that. You might be the only one. You know, maybe Imani has an idea of how much it's adding on.
Yeah, I think that's something that would have played in the back of her mind. Because she doesn't want the Radiant Shepherd to sort of move base of operations, or she doesn't want her info to become outdated. But she just sees, like, she can see the excitement in Ryan's eyes, and she knows that, like, he'll never have this opportunity to go and see these things again. And there is just something, for a moment, the moment that she decides to sort of, like, take that route, she knows that she can't deny him that. So she does it, but it's something that weighs on her mind as she does it. Like, as soon as she does it, she kind of wonders if she regrets it. But then she looks at Ryan. She can see that he's sort of, you know, he's flicking the parts of his camera, you know, in sort of like anticipation and stuff. And she's just like, no, I think I might have made the right choice here. But she doesn't mention how many miles this will add. She neglects to tell people that part.
Now, you guys are on this, like cracked highway. It stretches ahead, winding through a more like desolate part, like desert scape first. You see these like faded billboards that some flicker with like these long forgotten ads as a broken drone shaped like a grinning child lies motionless on the side of the road. In the distance, you can see black wires coil across the sky, feeding into a massive neurograph tower. A rusted Dodge Caravan overtakes you, one of its windows shattered, with the faint smell of smells like teen spirit hairspray wafts you in the face. That passes by as well. What is everybody doing on the car? You guys are officially on the freeway, and the journey has started.
I would just like to say Luke definitely has a smile on his face, knowing that the travel will be a bit longer, delaying the inevitable. Because I'm a bit suspicious. Because on Imani, it's like, because medical, why you have the whole cooler? Then like, what is this? I need to like the first stop, the first chance I get a chance to Neurocaster, I'll double check what her goal is, just to be sure. I am a rather suspicious person in this regard, because you are a unknown factor, and I kind of need to know.
Yeah, she's kind of feeling that way about you too. Whenever, like, you're not directly, if you're looking at her, she feels it, and she's making a point not to look back at you. But when you look away, she just takes small glances, and kind of like slowly puts her hand on top of the cooler, just to like have some sort of security with it. And she talks as little as possible. Like, if someone asks her a question, she'll answer, but pretty much is kind of keeping quiet, looking out the window, or reading one of her books that she happened to bring to work that day. Because she didn't pack any clothes. She didn't pack any extra stuff. She just got food and medical stuff. So the clothes on her back is what she's going to be wearing for the rest of the time.
Ryan will be just looking through his viewfinder on his Polaroid, seeing it's like kind of worried about the glasses glare sometimes, so he'll roll it down, and then the buffeting freeway air kind of just pushes into the car briefly, and then kind of looking around, seeing like the disarray stuff is getting pushed around, he kind of shyly rolls it back up.
Yeah, I think Kath is like eyes on the road, obviously, but she's constantly sort of eyes flickering to Ryan, and every like when he undoes the window and the breeze comes in, she raises an eyebrow at him to get him to roll it back up again. And then when he does, there's a really sort of satisfied feeling in her heart that he sort of listened to her, without her needing to say anything, that he got it. And it sort of cements her decision that she knew she was right to take the scenic route. For like just a moment, the thoughts of Radiant Shepherd and that kind, and everything that she's setting out to do, sort of goes out her head. But she drags the thought back quickly, because she knows if she loses sight of it, all of this would have been for nothing. But yeah, she's eyes on the road, sort of. But yeah, her focus is on Ryan, but eyes on the road.
DM.
Yes.
Would I notice that Kat keeps side-eyeing Ryan?
I would say yes, because of your close relationship. And you would see, like, the slight head turns. You know, it's still mainly focused on the road, but you would see, like, the slight kind of so her eyes can keep looking at him.
Okay. Thank you.
I think as well, like, as she's sort of driving and that sort of, like, uncomfortable silence sort of fills the car, she'll, like, so, Ryan?
Yeah?
What is it you're most excited to see?
Well, I heard about some of these, like, kind of murals painted on the side of buildings. That sounds kind of cool, just hand-painted murals just on this brickwork. They say the Golden Gate Bridge, when you hit the sun just right, that the metal kind of shines. So I'm hoping if I can get a picture of that at least, I can, as well as, the ocean and the coastline, like a clean coastline with like kind of just, it kind of rambles a bit and kind of tripping over his words with his excitement. He's like, but after all of it, I'm going to have a whole binder of these Polaroid photos, and looking back on it, oh, it'll be great.
So it's a trip for memories for you then?
And you kind of see his smile falter a bit. Yeah. Yeah, just getting those memories, something to look back on before everything kind of goes away. And my folks would love to see them, you know? I think they would like to see the bridge as well.
Yeah, your parents. And she already knows the answer to this question, but she asks it anyway. How are they doing? I haven't seen them around in a while.
Oh, they're great. Mom always has something ready on the stove, and you know, dad works a lot. He'll come in late. So we don't have a lot of time together. And kind of his neck kind of gets that same tightening to it. Kind of just his face gets a little more tight as if he's trying to hold up that appearance that he had earlier with that his smile. Yeah, but we make time for each other. We still have game night. Just means I have a few more chores to do. Like out the garbage, make sure dishes are done, you know, help out. So I figure it was nice of them to let me come on this trip. And I think just bring all these memories back of this fun time might help brighten everybody's day.
Well, you might even find a new holiday destination that you could talk to them about, right? And she'll give you a sort of pat, like, on the leg. And then as she looks away from Ryan, she looks in the rearview mirror, catches Luke's eye, and immediately looks away.
Yeah. Ryan will kind of nod at this and kind of turns, looks out the window. He's a little less fidgety. Now that there's something on his mind, he kind of just watches the scenery kind of blur past them.
This whole conversation, Ryan is paying acute attention in the exchange. As mentioned before, I haven't seen them, like, between Ryan and Kat, I haven't seen them interact much, and me noticing this everything, despite me occasionally looking towards their direction and looking out of the window, I am listening. Ryan, how often do you help, you know, people from the floor? I know we barely interact, but I did see you come around, especially to Kat.
Kat and me have been neighbors forever. I always like to help her out. Just odd jobs, something to make a little bit of money here and there. As far as other jobs, it's most people can do a lot of their own chores. So I tried a little bit on the opening floor, but nothing really took. I mean, a few jobs here and there, just like a bit of deep cleaning for a bathroom. But yeah, nothing too crazy.
You have the you have a like hardworking mentality.
Yeah.
Ryan's one of the most hardworking people I know. He's honestly, he comes around just to see how I am sometimes, especially when I first moved in, and a bit like you, Luke, I wouldn't have been able to be where I am now without him, I don't think. Every job I've set does it before I expect him to. And he never complains either. And she'll sort of, like, reach out to give you an elbow. But she's not looking, so whether it hits or not.
Ryan's cheeks will get a little more red. He kind of has that smile.
My eyes narrow on that, like, very slightly. It's like, okay, interesting.
It is good to know that we have hard workers here. They'll make this trip much easier than not.
My head turns like, oh, she speaks.
Do you say that out loud to me?
Yeah, look up. Oh, she speaks.
Well, I do have vocal cords, a mouth, and an esophagus, so yeah, I can speak. It's just don't say anything not worth saying.
I think a lot more people could be like that, and she sort of nods, sort of encouragingly.
You heard that, Ryan?
What's an esophagus?
And Imani looks at him, looks up at him slowly, and she like kind of puts her hand against her throat, like this thing. Did you not have anatomy class in school? Do you also not have a board labeling all of the body parts in your home? Am I the only one that does that?
Is that a thing in most houses?
I don't know.
Ryan will kind of have this shocked expression, his kind of wide eyes, like he's missing out on something.
I mean, I got my board because it was half off at the Scholastic's bookstore. Okay, it was nice. It was good decoration. I like putting it in my office. And it's good to know what your body does, and in case something goes wrong, you don't know what. It's better to know than to not know.
Like, Ryan will eagerly nod as he's trying to soak this in. So do all doctors have that board to kind of reference?
Her eye kind of twitches, and she, like, slowly, like, smiles. It doesn't reach her eyes, of course, so. She's like, oh, no, I'm just a pharmacist, not a doctor.
You can see the understanding's lost on Ryan, but he just keeps nodding. He's like, yeah.
Now, you guys are driving, and, you know, an hour passes, another hour, and you're starting to get to a place where it's a little bit overcast. The weather is getting a bit grayer, and you guys are all along the stretching road, and it is blocked by construction, and you can no longer go forward, Kath. You see this crew with a large truck and blinking yellow warning lights that seems to be laying new tarmac. That's what it looks like. But as you draw closer, you see that no work is being done as your car comes to a slow crawl and then it stops. You see that all of those workers, the crew, all have neurocaster helmets on and are all lost in some type of neuronic daydream. You see one is standing in the middle of the road, another is just sitting on the ground, and the third is lying flat on his back. All, again, have those neurocaster helmets on and all are seemingly unresponsive. What do you do? Thanks for listening to our introduction to The Electric State, The Path to Dawn. We're thrilled to have you with us as we embark on this new journey. And if you enjoyed the start of this new adventure, please share it with your friends and family and consider leaving us a review as well. New episodes will be available every week on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Amazon Music. I'm your Game Master, Maia, and I'm joined by Arcturus as Ryan, Serge as Luke, Meg as Catherine, and Naya as Imani. We can't wait to dive deeper into this world with you, so please check out the links in the description for more about the game and our cast.